Welcome to Blue Collar Mystics, the under-the-hood approach to the depths of human consciousness. So many mysteries, so little time, so many big words. That's why we aim to take the mystical and make it practical, usable in your everyday life. And you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your story. What happened when you started asking yourself the real questions? Like, who am I? What is this? Is it a hologram? Is this some kind of weird cosmic joke? Hey, these are the questions that we are trying to get to the bottom of as we explore the final rabbit hole together here as Blue Collar Mystics. Right, welcome to the show, everybody, Blue Collar Mystics. I am ecstatic to be here recording this one today. This one's going to be one for the books. It's one that has been on the books for a long time. It's been in the Akashic Record, and we're about to pull it down. And I'm super excited to welcome Gordon Hamill. Man, I didn't even ask you how you'd like to be introduced. There's so much to unpack, and it's so exciting to be able to sit down finally and really kind of open it up. So I just want to start by welcoming you. Like, you are a blue collar mystic. This is an apropos, kind of interchange, and we've all sort of been funneled or filtered or kind of jumbled together, getting to know each other and really seeing kind of an organic community come together. We're part of a lot of the same groups and explorations, from Abby's Dream Coven to the Weaving Spiders, and there's just so much that overlaps, and there's so much to get into. You are an owl whisperer. or at least from my perspective, it seems that way. Owls are fascinating. I used to teach about them when I taught outdoor education, and they were my favorite thing to teach about, because I had these little factoids and shit. And but anyway, we'll get to all of that. But I thank you so much. I'm so excited. Thank you for being here, man.
Me too, buddy. I'm glad to finally do this again, because I mean, we've had conversations plenty of times, but and I feel like I know you through your show too. And you're right. Like, this community is kind of all falling together already. It was already here waiting for us to find it. You know, it almost seems like it was already happening, but we all kind of seem like we've all fell into it just the last couple of years. And it's just exploded, just from, you know, my communities getting in touch with your communities, and like all this overlap, and it's just there already. And it's waiting for other people to find it. I think, you know, at this point, I think we're on we're right at a level where I think we're going to see people finding us. People are going to be looking for our kind of understanding, because the rest of the understanding clearly ain't working.
Right.
Right. And that's why we have shows like this and spiders and you know, little communities like Abby's Dream Coven and my conspiratorium and all these things. We're looking for the mystery. Humans are primed right now to be able to see it. Finally, like, everything's like stripped away. All the bullshit is coming to the surface, and everybody's like, wow, this ain't what we were taught. Good for you. Welcome.
Hey,
we've been here the whole time.
Yeah. Pull up a chair, man. This is going to blow your mind. Yeah.
Just wait. Yeah. It gets better. Right. Or worse, but probably worse first.
Right. Absolutely. No, it's so cool. I think that's what's cool about our communities, and what the commonality is, you know, we're people exploring the truth and trying to figure it out as best we can. But nobody's talking down to anybody or anything like that. It's a group of people, and you guys, everyone is so well educated and has such a specialty. Frankly,
with the spiders, I'm sometimes intimidated with everybody's knowledge. It's a lot, right? When you get Gabriel and you get Chance and yourself and, you know, I mean, the people just start adding up, Sean, and I could go on and on, right? And so talk about synergy, right? Like that's like a 90s buzzword, but I mean, in real time, you can see that. And what's cool about the web is it's, you guys are adding synchronicities. You're sharing commonalities. And I think that's beautiful in the weave. It makes sense. And it's cool. It's a great way to explore reality and find common ground. So I don't know, maybe talk a little bit about how you got involved with that, or I don't know, where should we start really? Yeah, we can start as early on as you would kind of like. I'd love to hear even.
Well, you know, I was born a young black boy. And,
that's right. In Arizona.
The spider thing happened really organically. Like David Barsky started, he and Jim Maiden, and Jim Maiden is an OG from the RX Only Picture Show. If you don't know what that is, then go back and find all of that stuff because it's fantastic. And if you have ever heard of Tracy Twyman or that her whole story, that's where it's kind of like blew up. Anyway, being able to connect with those guys who I'd already kind of, you know, knew externally and followed the story before that, and then finding out we're so similar. Like Sean and I had these crazy synchronicities right off the bat. Same. And it's just mind blowing every single time. So the name of the spiders, our name of the show is Weaving Spiders Welcome. If you're not familiar with what that is a reference to, it's the crest on the outside of the Bohemian Grove that says Weaving Spiders Come Not Here. And it has a picture of an owl on it. Go figure. I thought it was just a great, clever name when Barsky had me on the show first. And I'm like, oh, this is the best. Weaving Spiders Welcome. I mean, come on. So, and I'd already been trying to integrate all the old symbology, like that kind of symbology that's like turning the owl into something negative. I was already trying to, you know, I had that connection already. So if there was anything I could do to change that and bring it back to nature, like you and I think you and I have found mysticism kind of through nature. Like God talks to us through nature all the time, whether you want to call it God or source or whatever you want to put a name to it, it's there. And we just have to listen. Whereas all these other symbologies, they're fed to you. When you just sit out in nature, it shows you what it wants. It shows you how it wants you to react, and it'll teach you. You may have to be really, really patient for a very long time, but it will show you. And when it does, or hey, it might take 3 days. So let's go to the owl story. In fact, this is perfect timing that we're recording this, by the way, because when in 2018, I went into rehab, I got out right at the tail end of 2018 into 2019. The first month I got back, I was still trying to get my bearings and just trying to survive. I was in survival mode, really. And when I went back to work, I had this perfect situation of this tree, right? With these, and it was this great acacia tree, and it had these cinder blocks under it where I could meditate in the morning. I'm like, okay, nobody will talk to me out here. I can go out and meditate in the mornings and see what happens. Cause it was, you know, I'd been a practice meditator, but I was kind of starting from scratch. You know, when you come off of, I was getting off of, probably 4 or 5 medications at the time, opiates, alcohol. I was trying to kill myself with alcohol, really. And I got out. I was just about 250 pounds and just completely miserable. But I had this tree. So, okay, I'm going to commit myself to do this meditation in the morning. And as soon as I started, I went out there, sat down, and I felt like something was staring at me, right? And I'm like, what is happening? So I'm really trying to get in the zone, right? Just kind of let go and just breathe. And, but you know, when you're in that situation, your mind is just going a million miles an hour, just trying to keep a bubble, you know? And, so I'm meditating and I look up and there's this pair of owls staring at me in this tree. I'm like, and if you've ever been, you've been around a great horned owl, you know how intimidating they are. And just being in their presence is, it's heavy. Like there is a, when you say a presence, when somebody walks in with a presence, like you, sometimes you see a bird. And sometimes you see other birds and you see a hawk and or an eagle, and that's pretty cool. But when you're in the presence of an owl, it's different. And when they're staring at you in the eyes, that is very different with these giant, you know, murder feet. And yeah. It's very intimidating. So I thought, okay, if I can get down my meditation game with these guys, you know, staring at me, I could be, you know, this is a good exercise, right? So as soon as I was able to, it probably took a good 3 days to really just relax and chill out. But by that third day, like they were cool with me. I was cool with them. And it was like, we were almost bonded. Like, and it's been 4 years since then that I've been able to go out to that tree and get to know this family of owls. What really, oh gosh, I don't even know where to go from there. Like the big reset for me when I came back was honestly a 3 day fast. And I did that under the tree and on that third day. And it was probably the end of February, probably right about this time, 4 years ago, that I did that, and it reset everything. Like, and I was explaining this to my wife, like it was a trip. It was like a DMT experience. And I didn't know that at the time, but I did a 3 day fast and I was meditating under that tree. And it was like, on that third day, something happened where, and I don't know if it was, I mean, if you've ever done a good fast, you will you could have a psychedelic experience.
Sure.
With mine, you know, under an acacia tree, which happens to have DMT in it, you know,
the burning bush,
it just, and the, yeah. I mean, it's the synchronicities are just absolutely astounding of this place, this spot, this tree, the owls. Later that year, probably a month after I had started, I find that she's got a nest. The female has a nest right near where I park. And she starts having babies in there. So I'm immediately initiated into this parliament. Mm.
The parliament most funkadelic, baby.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bootsy.
They, you know, I don't know how to even explain how that even happened because it's not me, you know. A lot of people see my photos and especially in like now I've got three new eggs that I'm documenting with. Gwen is the matriarch, the big female. Peter is the male, and like it's a whole thing. And at the time I was, well, gosh, let's have a question that'll get me back on track.
No, that's good. That, no, this is,
get
this
it
is
started.
No, definitely. So absolutely. 100%. Yeah. That is fascinating. I think really one of the big things is that you're pointing out is that reflection in nature and how that maybe is a bit of a grounding point for you when you had this reset. And I've had a similar experience. What I've been told is the Akashic records were opened. I've heard of other people have Kundalini experiences, even up to and including, you know, people who are just really close, just regular folks in my friend group have some experiences through fasting or meditation or near death or getting sick or, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, probably drugs too, right? Like there's a lot of ways to induce it for sure. But that actually really contextualizes the owl thing, because I mean, like I said earlier, I always thought they were cool and all that, but like when you kind of imprint even almost and say, okay, this aspect of reality, this piece of nature and I, we are one, but here's a marker, here's a tether, you know, and I see the connection a lot more now. And the fact that it's kind of grown into a family, you know, that you've got to experience and be a part of and document, and we all get to be a part of that is pretty freaking four now.
Four generations now. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. So 2018, you get out of rehab, off opioids, off alcohol. And what happens next? You make this connection with the owls and you obviously have changed a tremendous amount since then. What started it, to...
It all kind of happened. I mean, it's all in one... It's so much, but it's in one thing. At the same time, I was trying to build back my brain because I really felt like I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. So I had like all this, I was fighting myself back from coming out of the addiction and the mind fog of the alcohol and opiates anyway. But I knew because of that, you know, there's a really good chance you got brain damage, you know, because that's what those chemicals do. And as I was coming back from that, I'm like, God, what have I done to myself? You know, I do that self-punishing thing. Like, oh my God, what am I going to, you know, I broke my only asset, you know, because this was the thing. My body was a mess. I was 250 pounds at the time. And, everything was failing. I couldn't think my way out of a wet paper bag. And so I'm trying to rebuild it. And my wife finds this idea that a ketogenic diet and high fats are good for the nervous system and builds back your brain. I'm like, all right. So I hear this. I remember this doctor that I had heard years before, a Canadian guy, talking about how your brain is made of fats and cholesterols. And
is it Gondry? Is that who it was?
That might have been that might have been him.
I might be off, but I think
you're probably right.
Yeah.
But so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I went full keto, high fat. And I did the meditation and everything just clicked for me. I found out I got off wheat. So you do an elimination first too. That's what helps with that fast will help you eliminate all the junk that you've been putting in your body to begin with. And then you can figure out, you know, as you add in other things, you can figure out what your body is sensitive to or how you react. Right. So I found out wheat is absolutely terrible for me. I'm probably celiac. Or they just spray glyphosate on everything and everything's ruined.
That's so, kind of
which it seems like it is.
I mean, it's the unfortunate truth, man. I mean, it's kind of hard to get away. And that's something that I'm struggling with, frankly, is all the process stuff. You know, it's just, it is, but I get the fast. That makes sense. But so you got that stuff out and you started eating.
Started cooking keto. For myself and, and learning how to feed myself for the first time. Like really, you know, I knew how to cook and stuff, but it's very different where you just, where you're putting intention into every meal and every intention into everything you do, including the coffee in the morning, including the snack in the afternoon, including your lunch, whatever you're doing, everything that you're putting into your body has to be, you know, you really got to be mindful about everything, about the breath that you're taking in, about the clothes that you're putting on, you know, these kind of things, things I never even thought about. We just do it.
Right.
We're just trained. You just do the thing. You know, here's your schedule. This is when you go to work. This is when you, you know, you have to do these things. And then you keep getting drained and drained and drained. And then you add in more processed garbage because you're trying to fight off the
stress,
the stress and cortisol. You're escaping at night. You're drinking to escape at night. And then you're pounding monsters or rock stars in the morning to try and, you know, fight that.
Right.
It's just a never ending cycle.
Right.
Until we reset everything, you don't even know who you are. And then you figure out, you're like, oh, I really don't know who I am. So I lost 55 pounds within the first month or two.
Wow.
And then like 95 within 6. So I lost a total of 95 pounds. I gained a little bit here and there, but I've maintained since then for 3.5 years now.
Wow.
And it was after that, it was super easy. And I know, and I hear people, they struggle and we all struggle with these things.
Sure.
But once the mindset was set that everything you take in is something and it is part of you, and you are part of everything, you only want the good stuff, right? Like, because you finally love yourself enough to care about what you're doing for you, not because you're making a your avatar look pretty for other people, right? You're not making a show for anybody else, but you've finally got authentic with you so that you can be authentic for other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is kind of where the whole heal yourself, heal the world idea comes into place, which this is all part of the whole mystic mantra, right? Is the seven laws. And if you're not familiar with the set, you're familiar with the seven hermetic laws, but
for sure.
It all comes back to one law, which is one, the law of one. Everything comes back together. It's all interrelated and it's all mind. It's all here.
Yep. Yeah.
Everything you do is here. I read this book years ago called Biocentrism by this dude, Dr. Robert Lanza, which interestingly enough, he is a geneticist. He was one of the first guys that really started cloning chickens early on when he was a kid. Even in fact, he was genetically engineering chickens as like a junior high or high schooler. But he has this book called what did I say it was? Biocentrism. So the idea of biocentrism is that everything, nothing actually exists until it is perceived. So if a tree, it's the whole tree falls in the forest thing, right?
Right.
It doesn't actually happen unless somebody observed that thing.
Right.
Now, it may have put out the reverberation or the vibration. You don't know that. It doesn't really become a thing unless you're there.
Yeah.
Right. Until you're there. And there's a lot of proof for this in physics. They can kind of prove it over and over again. Nothing is really there until you're seeing it. The double slit experiment.
Yep.
It proves it that our intentions change the thing being observed. You can't have, it's the law of observation, or the observation effect, right? Whatever is being observed is changed by the observer. And that just tells you that you're making it. I'm making it. When I observe it, how I interpret that event is how it is.
Right.
That's how we shape our reality that we're living in.
Who is the master who makes the grass green?
Exactly. It's you.
Yes. Spoiler.
Spoiler.
Yeah. But I like the way you phrased that. It's like, we're telling the story about it and how it relates to us and it's however we accept. So I've recently jumped into this book that explores some of Alfred Adler's psychology and philosophy. And he was kind of the contrary to Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. And one of the things he said, which goes back to accepting yourself first, your own authenticity, is that his basic premise for the book is that he says there is no trauma. And I don't really necessarily agree with that. But his point is that you could have two people experience the same problem or situation and have completely different lives as afterward, right? Like it could be a tragic event. Somebody becomes a millionaire and very successful. Another person becomes, you know, destitute or what have you. But the idea is that if you could separate yourself from everybody else, that all problems are really interpersonal problems. And it comes back to that. And he does a great job of resolving this later on in the book too, I will say. But if we could isolate ourselves completely from every opinion and outside observance, then we wouldn't see anything wrong with ourselves, right? Like we would accept ourselves truly,
right.
But it's not possible to be completely cut off, you know? So there's really not a great way to test that, but it makes a lot of sense to just be like, okay, well, what am I projecting, you know, to kind of get in there? Because most of it is that we are mostly motivated by that. But like I said, he does bring it around at the end of the book and say that we take value from what we give to the people around us. Like, and that's really how we can build our own self-worth is by giving back to the community, because we are part of it, whether we like it or not. We can't truly separate ourselves. But that's the quandary that he sort of starts out with, right? The problem is kind of presented first. But that authenticity of truly accepting yourself, like that sounds like as close to freedom, right?
Right. And it's not like I've done it. I'm saying it's a process, you know, like single day it's a choice to make that choice, right?
Absolutely it is. And it's something that we're all doing. And I think we're kind of, you know, back to your point on the one, we are resolving back into on a staircase of consciousness, that one. And it is this crazy, strange, bizarre experience on the way to that. But I do think it all resolves ultimately. And I think that we are the reflection as above, so below of that grand overarching communion, you know, gathering, you know, grouping, whatever it's called. So we're kind of experiencing those growth pains and coming together and more as it is, you know, overall, I think it's also happening with us individually. Maybe that's part of
right. Our wake up. And that's how it happens is individually first. And then as you and I have these discussions and the spiders talk and like, we have all these tendrils that are going out all over the place. You know, the web is much bigger than us. The whole thing is greater than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. And this is what we find but I think we don't get there until we find that authenticity. And then this is why I think nature is such a great reset. And this is why a lot of us find ourselves in nature. Like you hear over and over again, guys that came back with PTSD from any war, go out in nature, disappear, and then come out there. They just stay out there, first of all. And they, like, either you disappear or you come back healed. It's like, and this used to be kind of part of our culture that we've lost almost completely. Like, we don't have a an initiation into manhood,
right?
As kids, like, our culture did not have that for us. We right. didn't do sweat lodges, and we didn't. This is stuff we have to find out the hard way.
Right. We don't have mentors either to right. take us to do those things. And, you know, one thing that I think about a lot is we're only 120 years into this century, 123 years into from the Industrial Revolution. That's really in the scope of time, not that much, you know. But if we go back to 1900, turn of the century, we absolutely had, you know, great thinkers and writers, Ralph Waldo Emerson and many other transcendentalists and people who were thinking about that. So I love a lot of the New Thought stuff from the turn of the century, actually. Like, there's a lot of great books, and I think Theosophy and a lot of other mm-hmm. ideas and a lot of seance-y kind of weird woo-woo shit was popping off back then, which is kind of interesting to me. But I think you're exactly right with nature, and we've gotten further and further sort of removed from nature. Like, I love the fact that we can sit here and be able to talk on a window, but, you know, there is a true connection to nature that I think we have lost. And then especially as men, that initiation ritual and meeting the wild man, as it's sort of outlined in Iron John, and having that whole experience, it's kind of missing. We've been in this sort of new culture only now for about 120 years, really not that long. So if we could look back and maybe but I guess we kind of have to DIY a lot of the things that were sort of embedded in society. Because also at the turn of the century, from my understanding, there was almost another revolution in this country over the school system. And we're not taught about that, but they did not want the school system coming here. There were a lot of people who were pissed about that, you know, because it descends from Germany. It was called Schule, and it was intentionally implemented in order to basically corrupt make the youth compliant. That was the whole point, because the King of Prussia was pissed off because all his soldiers wouldn't fight for him. So he had to
force loyalty. Right.
Yeah,
exactly. They had to engineer loyalty into it and obedience. That's what it was for. And as somebody who's worked in the school system for the last 10 years, I kind of get it. Like, I really, really get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's John Taylor Gatto's work is incredible on that. Brett mm-hmm. Venod and the School Sucks podcast and many other people who've done a great job covering that. But I, you know, just to kind of contextualize where we are, it's kind of a crazy time, and things are happening so fast. But when you think about the fact that this is new territory, it's new terrain. Humans haven't lived like this yet. It's completely, and it's happened, and it's changing really rapidly.
That too. We know of. Well, I mean, this is why, I mean, I think this is why the ancient stuff is calling to us. All these right. ancient books and ancient mysteries, and we're coming back to like this hermetic understanding, or we're drawing on the mystical wisdoms, you know. That
well, that's another thing. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead, dude. This is your show, man.
Well, no, I know, but I really want to talk. about you, but I think the turn of the century too is another time that's kind of particularly driving a wedge between science and mysticism, because, you know, going back mm-hmm. in time, you've got alchemists that do both, mm-hmm. right? Like, they're chemical and spiritual, and that stuff is all sort of lost, or at mm-hmm. least halved and compartmentalized at that time too. And so I think that might be part of our inclination to get back to the ancient stuff too. I'm also interested in like other ways to generate electricity, and yeah, I'm mm-hmm. sure those things probably exist. I don't know that I can't prove it, but I think there's probably some of that as well. But yeah, I think that's so interesting that those two things halved. And it's like the medical community, it's like shamans are just, it's like, or scientists are just shamans from the future with like lab coats on or whatever, right? Like they've compartmentalized everything or chemicalized things and separated them, when in our past, our ancient past, these things were all one and the same, really. Maybe with electricity as well.
Well, the whole idea of reductionism, we have to pinpoint, we have to have one specific answer. We have to have a yes or no. It's all binary. Like, it's either this or it's that. It's easy. it, we have to have an answer. You tell me the right way to do it, I'll do it. That's how we're programmed to do, you know? But that's not how the universe really works. You know, it, and which law, which Hermetic law is it that both things are always true?
Yeah, it's like it might be correspondence, or every truth is a half truth. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Everything's a little bit of everything, right?
And right.
Which is the same law as of polarity, which is the same law as mind, because it's all here. It's all one law.
Yep.
So at any rate, doing the meditations, healing, you know, all that stuff kind of like fell into place. The owls were there. I was ready for it. But the real big thing was it was timing. The synchronicities I could not ignore anymore. So it was, but what I think the main thing that really set it all off to let it all go and let it all happen was letting it all go, was that surrender to, okay, and this is what happened with the owls. This is because of the owls. They were staring at me. I'm like, okay. And I understand this from animal whispering. I come from a ranching family. My grandparents were ranchers, and my sister has a bunch of animals up in Montana and stuff.
Awesome.
But understanding, you know, a whispering with an animal, when you let go and you just become one as an equal with whatever that animal is, they may or may not react, you know, it's up to the animal, but you have to come to their level. You don't tell them what they're going to do. Like, you got to get cool with them first for them to trust you. Right. And that was the meditation of just letting go. And you hear these they almost sound like platitudes of, you know, the magic of surrender, and which turns into some bullshit term some new agey douchebag is going to use. But right. It's true. You let go and magic finds you. Like, you do what it takes to open up to the magic, and it'll find you, and it'll make sure that you can't ignore it anymore. And it will do things that maybe only you will ever know, but you can't ignore that it's something else. You can't say after that point, you could say it. You could say, oh, this is, I'm a materialist reductionist.
Yeah.
But you're never going to be again.
Nah,
you will be changed forever.
Yeah. And it's the things that you can't really prove either. But
I can't even tell you. Like, I could tell you. I could tell everybody, you know, that these things that happened. And it doesn't matter if you believe me or not. It's not for you. It's for me to experience, you know. You're talking about shamanism and the shamanistic calling. I had that with these owls, because of these owls, you know. I was sharing early on some of the pictures that I had been taking of Peter and Gwen. And somebody had in one of the like Facebook chats or wherever I was sharing them, in one of the chats said, do you feel like you're being do you feel like this is a shamanic initiation? And I hadn't even really put those two words even together, really, you know. And I thought it was a friend of ours, Lindsay Sharman, you know, Lindsay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it might've been her. I checked with her, cause she was really the only person I was talking to at the time where would have that kind of understanding, you know, and it wasn't her. It wasn't other people that I was talking to. But then, you know, understanding that, and I'm like, oh, just the weight of it kind of just blew me out of the water. Like, what if it really is? That's what I had to say to myself. But in that moment, when you hear the words of truth, like somebody says, like something that you know is hits you in your soul, where it's like, boosh, like it opens up everything. That was it. I'm like, wow, is it that? And over again, it has shown me, this is what it is. This is what's going to heal you. And you got to do the work to heal yourself, to get there, to do that thing. And it'll happen. It can happen for you. This is what I'm trying to tell everybody. You know, I'm not special. It took hard work to do this. Like, people say, they're like, oh, you have this great relationship with these owls and you're so lucky. I'm like, yeah, it took 4 years of fucking hard work, dude. Like, this isn't overnight.
Right.
You know?
Right. But, absolutely.
I mean, it can. It can happen to you overnight.
Sure, sure.
If you put yourself in that position, but you got to get the fuck out of your own way for that to happen in the first place.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that tension's resolved even just with action, right? Like, just taking action itself, it like burns off steam. It burns off nerves. It burns off conflict or friction, right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of it too. Cause I agree with you. I think things can happen overnight, but I don't think they really usually do for a lot of good reasons, you know, like mm-hmm. for really good reasons, right. You know, like, and then you look back and you're like, oh, and then sometimes you're like, you look back and you're like, oh, that's why. And then you were still wrong about that with being why, which is fun.
Right. You find it. Oh, I was, I am still wrong right now. I'm still wrong. Oops. Okay. All right.
I'll stand by, I guess.
Right. Right. Wait it out. Wait this one out too. Okay. Figure this one out.
No, but dude, that's so freaking cool. And I didn't know you had the background too of being, you know, on a working with animals and that being kind of part of your family's lineage. That's interesting stuff. And I think all those things, you know, they add up too. And you're putting that time, that investment in, which is just, it's incredible. It's awesome to watch. That to me is inspiring. And not to get into like hustle, grind, rah, 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 but I have an admiration for the process and the work itself, because it's in doing that habits established, that skill is cultivated. You know, it's not like rah, rah, like not in the like sense of like, yeah, closer, you know what I mean? Like not like that, but like right. In the way of respect and appreciation, you know, because it takes a lot of time. You can't just, yeah, you can't just scribble up a vision board and call it good. You know, like you got to get
works
out.
Works for Amway salesman.
I mean, it's a great way to start because I think that does sort of implant the idea. Right. And you're talking about timing, and I've noticed it with me. It's like, I try to force change on myself and sometimes have a really hard time doing it. I'll snap back or what have you, but there have been moments in my life that were peak moments where I was like, okay, I'm ready to get rid of this or that. And smoking is a great example of one of those things. It was a few years ago, but you know, I wasn't ready. And honest to God, didn't think I could do it for years and years. I was like, I would never be able to quit smoking. Like, I loved smoking. I would smoke 2 packs a day, you know, or whatever. And now I can't even think of myself that way. Like, a cigarette, really. I see my friends smoke them every once in a while. I'm like, that does look fun. But like, but I'll never smoke another cigarette again.
Good for you, man.
No, yeah, I don't.
Good for you. Mm-mm. Yeah. And you don't find those things until you do them, right? You don't know that you're a badass until you prove to yourself that you're a badass. I mean, nobody's really a badass until they've proven it. But, you know, talking about the family thing, that's another thing that I've really recently more tried to heal up, is that generational trauma is real, you know, and the things that we've all the negative things that maybe we've learned is probably because of our parents' trauma or their parents' trauma. And it, once you kind of see it, It can open up a lot of things and let you let go of a lot of things that maybe wasn't yours to begin with.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was like this old story that my old pastor used to tell about like baking in the kitchen, about how they would chop off a piece of the like meat and throw it away and cook the rest of it in this one pan. And so that's what this lady did when she grew up. She'd cut off a piece of the meat so it would fit just so in the pan. And then she'd come to find out the problem was they just didn't have a pan big enough for the whole piece. So she was hucking off a piece of it or something like, I can't remember. It was a dumb analogy like that, but something simple like that. It's a trickle down thing. It's something that you're not even consciously aware of that just gets passed down to you. That's part of the family. You know, you have different families have different senses of humor and all kinds of way of relating. But that stuff just kind of gets passed down over time. And I look up to my grandparents and my parents and everybody with a lot of respect and appreciation, but there's definitely things that were passed down that they had no idea about, that they just passed right on. And if we don't become aware of that, then it doesn't.
Right. And it's us blaming our parents for these things. It's probably, you know, because they weren't aware of it.
Right.
How are they going to be aware and for us to even know? It's the whole cycle. You don't know it. You don't know that you've got a problem until the problem's pointed out to you, right?
Exactly.
So, or you figure it out. And, you know, one of the things that I've been saying for a long time too is part of that process. One of the big things about that process is starting from scratch is very. And when I say starting from scratch, I mean in your whole belief system, like taking hold of what you feel like you think you need to understand and letting it go and starting over from scratch. Like understand that you know nothing. In this process, you know, when you're going into meditation, put nothing on it, let it all go and just live in the, you know, just saying live in the moment sounds corny and shitty, but like being in your body, being aware and being sitting in your body, completely conscious of your physical body, your spiritual body, your mental body, your emotional body. You don't even know those things until you know that you have those things, right? And you don't know that you have those things unless you've been open to experience that thing, right? So when you start from scratch and you have to re-examine all of your own bullshit, all of the rest of the bullshit has to get re-examined too from a different perspective, especially when you start over. You have to reevaluate everything in your life, your relationships with your family, with your friends, and you will lose friends. And maybe you'll lose family, but that, you know, it's part of the process.
They may come back too, to be.
And fair. They may come back. Yeah, exactly.
Cause you'll probably integrate all this shit and then you'll be able to kind of rejoin society. I don't know. That's how it happened to me. I was like, I'm out. and then I had to come, you know, like I had to cut the grass, get rid of it all. Right. Like like you're saying, like you gotta rebuild it. Everything
is reboot brutal. Yeah, I love that scene in Doctor Strange where the Ancient One separates the Hulk from or the Doctor Strange from his body, and she tells him to forget everything you think you know. And that's where you start. I'm like, oh, and I remember seeing that. I'm like, that's it. That's exactly what happened. Like, and once you get out of your own body, you know, and this is what psychedelics are, is this kind of this shortcut for some people. And if it helps people, that's great. I would suggest trying a 3-day fast and, you know, doing it on your own, you know, work, get your meditation game down first before you try any of those things. But they, I do feel like they are therapeutic. I feel like you could probably, like, you know, really get to another level with microdosing or anything like that. But you're never going to get to a level where that's not a scary situation until you're set in yourself. Like, I think that's why people scare themselves into like shrooms or whatever when they have a negative experience. It's because you had that intention to begin with.
Right.
You were scared to begin with. It's all here. Everything you do, you're going to see yourself. It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's like the scene in Empire Strikes Back where Luke has to go to the cave and kill himself, right? As Darth Vader.
Yeah.
It's all going to be you, man.
Yep. Yeah. That's, I tend to agree, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me because it is so mental, right? Like when it gets on top, oh, it's on top of me. It's like, well, you're on top of you, you know, that's mm-hmm. what's going on. But I also would encourage people to, you know, embrace those processes. And it's so easy to try to want to shortcut stuff now. But again, back to appreciating those processes and how, you know, it's like we did cold plunges and stuff. And it's like, your body does not want to go into freezing water, but on the backside, it's worth it. The payout's there to do that. I mean, you could just snort cocaine, but
you could.
Yeah, you could, but the dopamine's frankly better, more sustainable if you do the cold plunge. You know, so it's a better experience, but people also just learn to embrace. And I think that's when the results come to. It's like when you learn to fall in love with, it's ironic, of course, and paradoxical because everything's a fucking half truth, right? That's just it. But once you do fall in love with that process, then the gold comes when you're not looking for it anymore, when you're like lost in it, when you're like, I'm just doing the thing and I've built this process and here it is, right? And that's when the results come, when you stop looking for them, ironically enough.
Right. It's, when you stop looking, it shows you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, how much has dream work helped you? I know that you're...
Yeah,
you're really doing it too.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it as much as I can. I have a hard time. I have to be really intentional to even remember my dreams at all. And sometimes still don't. And I'm kind of like a little miffed, you know, that I haven't had a lucid dream yet because I've been close. But it's all part of that. And that's part of that process too, of just exploring it. There have been a couple of things that have been profound. And then there's been a lot of mysterious, unexplainable stuff, but I need to be even more intentional about it. It's not something that I have a natural talent for, like Abby does, right? Where she has been lucid dreaming for years and taught her kids how to do it and stuff. That's a fortuitous position to be in. It's envious. It's enviable a little bit, right? Because that would be great. I'm learning a lot with it, you know, for me. And I think I had an experience kind of similar to what you did maybe in 2016, as far as like an opening of the floodgates. And then it was a fast. It was actually, I did a cleanse and I was working with a hypnotherapist at the time too, because I was just kind of in a bumpy spot. Mm-hmm. It's like 2012, I woke up to the dystopia and the rest of those next years, so much dealing with so much trauma and anger and rebuilding back that, you know, model, because my paradigm just totally out the window. It's gone. And so a lot of struggle with that. And then I had an experience similar to that. And then I found that book Transurfing, which for myself and Abby and several people who are, you know, I found me and we found each other kind of through that book, because to us, it kind of opened things up and did a good job of explaining some of the new age processes, the quantum stuff, and putting those things together. 'Cause it's not so new agey.
if you will.
Yeah, and here's the thing: is it's not new agey at all. Like, understanding like lucid dreaming is a natural thing that humans naturally do.
Oh yeah.
So Abby and I have had this discussion too, that when I started lucid dreaming, I found an Omni article in high school. It's from 1987, and there was an Omni magazine, and it had a thing of the mind and controlling your dreams or something like that. And I'm like, oh, bitching, I want to do that. So I get this. I'm in high school.
That's cool.
I mean, what nerd is reading Omni magazine in high school?
No, that's awesome. I love dork. It.
But I found this thing and it worked. It didn't work immediately. It took a couple months, but you can practice into it, you know, over and over again. You do it. And then at one point it'll like, boom. And you're like, oh, this is it. And it's just kind of the same thing with meditation. You know, once you find the groove, what I found is once you feel that whatever the new sensation is, the thing you learn, like you got to another level, make lots of mental notes, like take it down in here. Like, this is the feeling. This is the feeling. Remember this. Remember how you got here.
Uh-huh.
And so when you're in that meditation, as you're going to sleep and it happens, you know, as you probably dream journal. Are you dream journaling?
Yeah. I write in the mornings. I do it kind of coincidentally with my morning pages. I'll usually scribble out a dream and some other BS.
I'm not good at it. I am terrible. My discipline in that is terrible, but
it's weird.
It does help.
Yeah, no, it's weird because my discipline falls in other things, but for some reason I can stay committed to that. It's bizarre.
But make those notes, you know, when you do it in the morning, like, but it's in here. Make sure you do it in here, because I do a 20 step, like one of the things that helped me was this exercise where you do 20 steps, you know, you visualize yourself walking down a staircase, and each time you take a step, I do it barefoot. So in my dream, I'm feeling each step. And as I go down each step and I'm counting backwards each step, I'm taking another longer breath and another longer breath out, and then step, and then feel it down. And by the time you get down to the bottom of the stairs, there's a doorway. And on the other side of that doorway is your dreamscape, is the dream world. And just kind of, this was the exercise that helped me. Now, the more I meditate and the better my meditation game is, like I can go in real easy, but it's not always. I mean, that's a goal. That's not something that just happens all the time. Like, sometimes I talk about it in the Dream Coven experiment, and it's like, it sounds like I'm doing it all the time. I do it a lot, but it's work. It's not something that comes naturally either. I mean, really natural. Maybe I have a tendency towards it, but it's been work. You know, you work these things. Like Abby, I know, has worked at these things for decades, and that's how she got there, where she is.
Yep.
So. But Abby and I have a lot more different coinciding things as well, like that are really weird. You know, it's beyond understanding these synchronicities between all of our different groups and things that link us that we don't know until we start to get to know each other are mind boggling. And it really is. that sense of wonder, like, you have to have a sense of wonder with this. Like, how do you not love this crazy shit that's going on? Like, it is bizarre, but it's also magic. Like, I get that a lot of people right now can't trust what they see online. You can't trust what you see with your own eyes.
You can't.
You can't. You can't do so. So you have to reset. Like, redo it. Everybody, you got to do it at some point, right? Do it now.
Yeah. Get out in nature too, you know. Oh, isolation, a little nature. Bit of isolation from the herd. And
yeah. And that's how you know is the fasting from that, from culture, from the understanding of whatever the bullshit is. You have to fast from that as well to know what you are.
Yeah.
And that this is what the great thing about rehab and not having being I had to do it out of state. And you know, no cell phones and no interaction with your normal world for 30 days was a great reset. Like, you really have to figure out, that's a good fast. You know, fasting online from online is probably a really wonderful thing that I probably don't do often enough, but I should. And it's a good exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. Disconnecting from all these different inputs. Well, we never had access to so much information. It's fucking crazy how much we have access to. One of the things that she tells you to do in The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron's book, is to take a week off from reading and all that stuff. That intimidated the shit out of me. And I was like, what am I going to do? What was so cool about it was doing that and taking that week away made me approach how I consumed content completely differently. So much more intentional. And whether it's music or, and that's another thing that I've been doing too at her advice, is that I really don't listen to a whole lot of music with lyrics in it anymore. I listen mostly instrumental music, different kinds, mostly like cool, like chill, badass beats and stuff. Like a lot of hip hop type beats, but you know, stuff like that and classical, all kinds of different stuff. And I still listen to music with lyrics in it, but it clears up clutter in the mind, you know, and being intentional and disengaging from content every once in a while, man, because then you come back in and you're like, oh, well, if I just focus on this thing or these couple of things instead of just letting my mind just go here and there and over here, and because focus is so valuable, it really is. I mean, it's cliche to say it like that. Intention is at a premium, and people, you know, that's the real currency is attention. You know, we've known that, but like, just to sit here and do one thing for 5 minutes without getting a ping or somebody coming in, and you know, there's so many things that can distract you, you know, and little processes that don't get finished sometimes just because you got distracted, you know, which is crazy. So understanding that and being conscious about it, it's insanely helpful. It's the only way that people can really, I think, get anything done. Sometimes I'm shocked that we get anything done. Blown away. Yeah. Especially
lately. Well, if you ever worked in a governmental institution, you know, like, it is amazing anything gets done with the garbage that people have to go through just to get one thing done. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's how the system should be set up, so it doesn't get the things it wants done, because the stuff that it is doing is actually getting done ain't that great. And ain't serving humanity. And I think people are starting to figure that out. Hopefully. But we're only going to figure that out on our own.
Yeah.
So each individual's got to figure that out for themselves.
The more people that do, the more that comes to get to that critical mass and the closer that we're getting. I really think we're in a really just displaced, funky spot right now where a lot of people are coming to that realization. And the more people that do, the more the overall awareness is going that way. But there's a lot of other noise going on as well during the process. It's like popcorn popping or something, you know?
Right. Well, there's no end. It's the, and That's the other thing you start to see when you get outside of yourself. Like, there's, you heal one trauma, there's another one after it. You heal one, there's another one. Guess what? Get ready. It don't end. Because, and as soon as you start, you know, celebrate those wins, of course. Mm-hmm. But just understand, the growth doesn't stop. Like, you don't get to a point where you're like, this whole enlightenment, I have to achieve a light enlightenment. Like, it's a thing that once I get here, I'm going to be okay. And once I get here, I'm going to be okay. And once I get to that level, there is no, it's, that's what eternity is. Like, everything's infinite.
Yep.
So there's always another one behind it. Everything's fractals. Everything's fractal linear. Everything's cymatics. Everything's vibration. It's all, it all comes back to those same seven laws again, mm-hmm. you know? And this is why we are having these discussions like we are, because we've proven it to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, David Data, are you familiar with him? He wrote a book, mm-hmm. The Way of the Superior Maybe. Man.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He talks about, like, don't look for an end in anything. And, you know, back to that process, because he's talking about finding purpose, and he talks about it in concentric circles, like smaller and smaller circles. And when you're going toward your deepest purpose, you're going toward your core fear. So, but it's like layers of an onion. So that's how you can tell that you're on path, is that you're going towards fear. And each time you get closer and closer to your deepest purpose, is how he illustrates it. Which is a great way, in my opinion, to kind of denote that. It's like, you got to, and it doesn't stop, but you got to keep going. He talks about masculinity and femininity a lot, and specifically masculinity. A great example that I remember from the book is, like, the difference between getting on a motorcycle and riding it because you're afraid, versus getting on a motorcycle and riding it because you're avoiding pain. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. so, and that's kind of how he corrals you to kind of keep going down that journey, and encouraging you too, that nothing ever, there's no finish, there's no end to anything. Right. And as an example, I just finished a comedy show last night, right? Produced it, co-produced it, and worked really hard. And then, you know, you'd think it would be over at the end, but no, it's not. You got to post it. You got to post everything that happened, and let everybody know, you know, try to get more attention, get the FOMO, the people who weren't there, to be like, oh no, I got to go to the next one, you know, and then mm-hmm. book the next one and start the whole process once again. Right. And so each part of that process, it's almost like there's not that much resolve, right? Like the tension should ease more than it does, but it just keeps going, and it does release, right? Like, that balance is happening, that vibration, you know, that tension and release, that call and response. I mean, it's happening, but it just seems like it should be more like a,
oh. Right. Yeah. You'd think there'd be a sigh at the end, like, oh, I'm finally here. It's done.
I can take a nap.
No. Yeah. Definitely take your naps. You need them, because it's going to start again.
Yeah.
You need it. Yeah. So that stuff is, I'm finding, is, you know, all of us are finding, especially in our older age, that those naps are important.
Yeah. And they're worth fighting for. I mean, those are precious. Yeah. Like, an hour right. in a hammock, bro. I never got it as a kid. I was like, God, that looks so boring. Why would anybody yeah. ever want to do that? I saw a meme the other day. It was like, how to have fun in your 40s. And it was just a dude laying in bed with his eyes open.
Nothing. Having nothing is yeah. is the best luxury.
Just like, being sore and in pain.
Right. Yeah,
right. I'm so happy.
Well, that is a thing, man. I remember my wife and I've talked about this, because we, you know, the opioid thing was real. And once you, we were both chronic pain patients also. And once you've gotten, like, that, just being free of pain, after you've been in chronic pain for years, mm-hmm. it's not the euphoria of the drug. It's the, just not having pain is euphoric, because your brain does this thing where I don't even know what this is. And like, it's just boom. Mm. And that happens in fasting too. Where your brain just, it's like this euphoria where I feel like when you're out in nature in that spot, like that's, it's not a euphoria that a drug euphoria. It's a euphoria that we should have been living the whole time. Right. Like that's like, you get little glimpses of, oh shit, that's our natural state. And you're like,
right.
And we're constantly trying to rein that back in, but you don't get there by trying hard. You got to try easy.
I like that.
One of my favorite books is The Music Lesson by Victor Wooten. He's a bass player. And his whole thing is don't try hard, try easy.
I love
it. You know, when you try hard, the harder you try, the more in your way you're going to be. And once you know all the scales and the music, you know, the music is in here. You just trust yourself to be with that other, because you're playing a team sport when you're playing music. You have to listen, especially with jazz. You have to listen and play off those people, and the music. And when that happens, it comes out, and it's greater than you are, because you all are. I taught rock band for a couple of years at a high school here. And one of the things that seemed to help with the students is we had a bunch of different bands, and I would have the bands do breathing exercises and vocal exercises, you know. And when I would be able to get them to do the breathing exercises together and kind of, I was getting them to meditate without letting them know they were meditating, but having them connect to each other, holding on to each other's shoulders, and breathing together. It's like the metronomes on the piano. Mm-hmm. All of them will sync up within, you know, a very, very short time. And I always noticed that when they played after that, they were always more synced. They always listened to each other better. And the vibe, because you're on each other's vibration. It's the same thing of why it's important to ground yourself. That's the other thing I tell everybody, you know, go stick your hands in the dirt somewhere. Yes, I am lucky I have this great tree, but right outside that door is another piece of dirt, and there's some dirt back there, and the earth is there. It's everywhere. We don't have an excuse. You know, I know we live in cities and stuff, but there's trees. You can go talk to nature. You have animals probably. You know, it's seeking you out too.
Yeah. Well, it found you.
Well, it found you too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm with you, man. I stand in my yard, and usually if I'm talking on the phone, I'll just stand out in the yard and talk on it.
Right.
But water for me too, huge yeah. water person. And so I do the whitewater rafting thing in the summer. I love it. I got to have it. And being out in it's cold water, and you know, you narrowly escape death. and there's something to that too. Gurdjieff talked about that, and Castaneda too. They get the shit scared out of them intentionally, you know, to get back into that survival. Because, you know, back to the Industrial Revolution's only 100 years ago, right? Like, we might have been out and chased by a bear or something, and those survival instincts, we don't push that envelope nearly as much. But for whatever reason, those adventure sports, and for me, rafting was just the one that I fell in love with. Lots of water, and it's beautiful. It's a great way to see, and also a lot of sunlight too.
Sunlight.
You get all of that, right? And mm-hmm. one and good exercise, because mm-hmm. you know, I like to exercise too, you know, get your yah-yahs out. And then there you are, and you're in nature, and it's water, and water's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. It's fun to watch it flow. And I've learned a lot about nature and spirituality and balance. You know, what's crazy about it is like a wave is formed, because of a rock. Like water flows over a rock and then it fills itself back in. So water's always trying to level itself out if it had an intention, I guess. But it's finding the path of least resistance and flowing downhill. And all of these bends and all these rocks are what create the features, like the big waves and the holes, we call them, and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool to watch it, because you'll see it flow over and then turn into a wave. And you're like, I know there's a rock there. You know, I can read the water and see what it's going to do. And it's awesome. It's a beautiful thing, because it's like you're working with the river, you know, it's pushing you, but you're also, you know, moving around with it. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And doing the shit that scares you, I think, you know, we think about that being white water rafting or skydiving or whatever. And the white water, I am envy you, dude, that you do that every single summer.
I'd love to take you down.
Dude. I would love to.
Come on down. It's fun.
But doing the shit that scares you, there ain't nothing scarier than going inside your own head. Because that is the stuff that every man, you know, not every man has been white water rafting or go skydiving, but every man will have to deal with his own shit at some point.
Sure.
And our own conscious is what keeps us from maybe our fear of dealing with those things, because it's going to suck. It's going to be hard, because you're going to realize some things about yourself that, you know, you suck at.
Yeah.
You know, that you can really improve on.
Yeah.
And that's the shit that's scary, but you're right. You know, fuck around and find out. You're not going to know.
You're not going to know.
Just try it.
Yeah. And you got to just try it. Just start where you are, you know, just tackle the next thing. Just the next thing. It doesn't have to be jumping out of a plane at 40,000 feet or whatever. Right. Like you can just do a public speaking endeavor or like, you know, whatever. Right. Like go out and do whatever it is that is you're nervous to do. It might be to go, like one of the things in that book is, that asks you a question, like, what are some things that you used to love to do as a kid? One of them for me was rollerblade. I used to love to rollerblade. It was fun. And I wrote that down. And I swear to you, 2 days later, my friend hit me up and she was like, hey, we're all going to the roller rink. You want to go? But I mean, I was scared to go. And then she was like, she asked me, and I was even kind of scared even at that point. I'm like, I'm an old man. Like, so like, I'm like,
awesome.
People are like, look at this tea party guy rollerblading around the roller rink. You know what I'm saying? Party guy.
That's great.
I had a blast, man. I really needed that. But I mean, I had to get out of my comfort zone to even walk in there. You know, like I just felt so odd and weird. I'm like, I look like I'm here to pick up my kid, but I'm actually coming in. And there were some other people there my own age and stuff too. It wasn't awkward, turns out. And that's often, I think, how a lot of these things turn out. But yeah, it's just embracing that thing that we're afraid of and being open to accept that criticism, which fucking hurts. Oh, it hurts. Oh, but if you can learn how to do that, then you can really, that's the magic pill. That's the thing that is going to enhance your progress a lot faster. Cause I don't think there's a better way to learn anything than like directly from somebody who knows it. Like if I find somebody who's a master at chef, like I could learn from a master chef a lot faster than I can from myself figuring it all out, you know, with a bunch of books on the shelf or whatever, because he's going to give me feedback and be very critical and tell me exactly I should cut stuff and, you know, why I did this wrong and why it turned out like that. But if I can take that feedback, well, that progress is going to shoot way, way further up. Now, you don't want to take bad advice, you know, like don't listen to open micers when they tell you, you know, what to do in your set, you know what I'm saying? But because I mean, you could, right? Like people could wind up taking, because you want to be open to criticism, but, you know, be aware of where that criticism is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How do you know? well, it's good for me. You know, I
exactly.
Yeah.
If you're going to teach me something, yeah, show me that you can do it first.
Right. Exactly. You know?
Yeah. I'm going to need to know that. Right. I'm going to need verified proof of that, and then we can talk. But yeah, I think that's a great place to start. I mean, it seems like that's where you started out, and look how quickly with that momentum, you know, once you kind of wiped the old sort of paradigm away and moved on, and then you started eating in a better way for your body, then that mm-hmm. all that momentum just started, you know, going. And you're embracing those challenges and going through those growth spells. It's the only way to grow. It's going to be uncomfortable to grow. Just it is.
If you're lucky, if it's comfortable, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's brutal.
it is brutal. But, you know, this is such is life. And that's okay. You know, embrace it all. Embrace the pain. Because as a chronic pain person, if you're figuring out how to deal with your chronic pain, you can lessen a lot of what you've gone through, but it's probably never going to go away. You're human. You've still got a body. You still have pain receptors. You will still be in pain, and you still have to figure out how to deal with that. You still have to deal with people in the real world. We still have to figure out how to navigate this technology thing with all the bullshit that comes with it, and separate the wheat from the chaff in here before it comes out here. And before we say, do something that we're like, oh shit, that's another lesson I got to learn. Okay. But it's a good thing, because now, you know, there's another lesson to be learned. Right. And this is that whole cyclical thing. As soon as you find out one, this is how I kind of know that everything is fractalinear, mm-hmm. you know, once you see like even these connections between us and all these, the spiders and all the other people, this is a fractalinear. Once you kind of see it, like, oh, this person is another point on that. Oh, this person is another point on that. Oh, and that event in my life was another point in that. And you kind of see it from the outside. It's like, oh, everything is fractals. And then you start learning about cymatics, and like cymatics look like fractals, right? Well, what if you extrapolated a cymatic of one tone and put all the tones in, you know, Dave Brubeck's Blue Rondo a la Turk or whatever, and you saw the cymatics, like what would that look like of each individual instrument and each individual sound? And because like with Dave Brubeck, you can take all four pieces, right? It's only a quartet. And this is a nice, this might be a nice little exercise. When you are listening to music, listen to beyond the music. I don't know if you've ever had this experience when there's a new clip of Danny Harrison and George Martin that have come out there, where there's a hidden guitar solo behind, I think it's Here Comes the Sun, in one of the Beatles songs, but there's a hidden guitar solo in there that would have fit perfectly, but changed the song completely. And they didn't know it until they got the master tapes and started digging in to all the levels and things, right? Well, I don't know if you've had this experience or not, but once you've, like, maybe Pink Floyd's The Wall, if you listen to that on good headphones, on a gold CD or something like that, and you're like, oh, I never heard that sound before. Like there was once you heard that new sound, that song will never sound the same to you again. And I think this is kind of why this leads me to think that Mandela Effect is fake. Because like I have the memory that Smokey Bear was always Smokey Bear. It wasn't Smokey the Bear. I had a Smokey Bear doll that talked when I was a kid. I still have it. It's a mess, but it exists. And people were always arguing, you know, Smokey the Bear. And the same thing with C-3PO's Silver Leg. I'm like, C-3PO always had a silver leg. I don't know where you're thinking of. And like all these things, we trick ourselves into misremembering things all the time. And you can change your timeline changes every 5 minutes. I mean, you are choosing a new reality every second you experience a new thing, because you're never going to see the rest of those things the same because you saw that one thing, right? It was a thing we just didn't know before. The more we have that gnosis and understanding of experience, then all those things open up. But you don't get there by not getting out of your own way too. Here it comes back again, right? Try easy. Don't try so hard at this stuff.
I love that. I love try easy. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense too. I spent some time playing in bands back in the day, and that was kind of what I was doing. And then over the past few years, that got me into comedy. There's a lot of crossover there. There's a lot of mutual respect there. Mm-hmm. From people who do comedy to people who do music, and vice versa. And for good reason, you know, because mm-hmm. they're both very highly respected skills and art forms, at least from each other's point of view. And I think there's a lot of doing it
in front of everybody. Like right. you are fully exposed. This is the most vulnerable thing. That's why people fear public speaking so much, because you are completely vulnerable.
It is tough. Yeah. Especially if in the moment and being able to be comfortable with that. It's a nervous system sort of thing too, right? Which kind of goes back to that fight or flight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love the try easy thing. And Victor Wooten, I do know who he is. He's a bass player for Bela Fleck. What's your instrument, main instrument? I assume you probably play a few.
I play a few, but voice was always my intro. Ooh. That was my first instrument. That's everybody's first instrument. But I was a singer as a kid, and I played guitar and picked up bass and all those things. If you were in a band, you're going to pick it up.
Yeah.
And,
for sure.
But those lessons, like I was in a jazz band in high school. Like it was a train wreck, but it was really fun. 12 guys on a stage, you know,
sure.
It wasn't like Slipknot or anything, but it was still fun.
Well, I love jazz. You know, if you play the wrong note, just play it twice and call it jazz.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you do it twice, they'll never know it was a mistake.
That was on purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, just
hit that whammy bar, man. You'll be fine. it'll get in there somewhere.
It's great. What he's talking about with the try easy thing, that, you know, you've learned the scales, like you've put all that into your body. I see the process is kind of basically the same with stand up. Now, it's not a team sport like music is. I mean, I think it is a team sport though, right? Like you're there mm-hmm. to make people laugh. There's things happening in the room, so there's that whole aspect of it, of the moment that exists. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the aspect of you're presenting material that is pre-written, like a speech. So there's those two conflicting worlds, you know,
and it's quite you have to make it sound like it's not
right. It can't sound, it's not supposed to sound rehearsed. Well, that's right. What I mean when it's like embedded, right? Like that's your scales.
It's muscle memory.
Yep. Basically. Yeah. Yep. And then you go in and you know, kind of what to expect. You know, you've gotten similar responses before. You still get miffed. I get miffed every night. Like something will work one night and then I do it like this, what I thought was the same way, and it just doesn't track the same. So
how do you reconcile like the authenticity of saying those jokes over and over again and them not getting stale? At a certain point it gets stale and you're like, I can't even tell this joke again.
There's no doubt about that. That is certainly a phenomenon. I think what it comes down to, and this is what I think a lot of us will learn as we go through this process, is it's about saying what you really want to say and using comedy as a tool to be able to say that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you get into it. And when you first start, it's just like learning to play the guitar. You're playing a scale and you can't even play a scale. You can't even play a chord yet, you know? And you're like, how am I going to express myself with this device? you know, until you kind of get the hang of it. You figure out what a chord is, you know, learn the bar chords and you learn the scales. And then all of a sudden you kind of get a little bit of a range of motion. And then, you know, you can start to speak about the things that you really actually want to talk about. When you first start writing jokes and first start trying to persuade people in a speech, it's really weird and difficult. And then it gets harder because you got all these people giving you advice.
Right.
And some of it's really good advice. I sought out a ton because I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel, right? I don't want to do that. But there's also some really bad advice out there too. You know, I think ultimately any art form, is about expressing ourselves. And that's kind of, I think that's the goal. That should be the goal, right? Like I heard, Ralphie May, and he was doing like a masterclass. I've seen several people talk about it. I'm nerdy about the process of it. And you can't help it. Like anything that you're interested in, that's going to come along with it. But he used to say something like, anything that is an idea to you, that's you. That's something that is part of you. It's part of your act. It's part of who you are. So explore that and go as deep into whatever that idea, that premise is as possible, because that's your perspective. And if you can have the winning perspective on something, that's kind of the game of comedy, is to have the winning angle and say, well, it's like this, you know, and then everybody laughs and it's like, well, he's got that take, like Jim Gaffigan's right about fast food or whatever, you know, right. He's got that, that sort of cornerstone.
Right.
And that's kind of his perspective. And so what he tells you to do, because it makes sense to me, because it's like some of the same things that I started out thinking were funny. I did not know how to form into something funny yet. But I'm over time being able to do that, right? Like one of the jokes that I've been working out is an NPR bit. Now, if I was going to tell you the bit, I could do it totally from our perspective where we see how ridiculous and propagandized it is. But I'm doing rooms of NPCs, so I've got to present it in a way.
How do you do that?
It's a good challenge, right? It's a good challenge. I do Biden material in woke rooms and it works. And that's because I'm coming from an angle where I'm not really taking an opinion on it. I'm just pointing out the absurdity of how ridiculous he is. My premise is that I love Joe Biden actually, because he's redefining comedy. You know, he's a slapstick genius. And so I go into that and just talk about some absurd scenarios and people think it's really funny. Actually, nobody really likes Joe Biden. Anytime I've ever asked for like an applause or rah-rah Joe Biden, the room just falls dead silent, and which cracks me up. Like that's my favorite part of the bit. You know what I mean? I'm just like, this dude's approval rating is so low. even at the woke mic, like they're not clapping for this guy.
They're
at best just satisfied that Trump's not in office anymore. Oh, you
know? Right. They think that's the relief. Like your relief from that. Just wait.
right.
The reason I was asking, I always wonder about I've only done comedy once, and it was like a ripoff of in junior high, it was a ripoff of somebody else. Anyway, but I've done a lot of stage time, you know. I was in musicals. I was Riff.
I love it.
In West Side Story. So I had a lot of jazz hands and really bad dancing. One of the best lessons that I've ever learned, and I try to bring this up as much as possible, is as a kid, I was doing music lessons voice lessons from Sister Peg Johnson. This nun in Billings, Montana, when I was a kid. And I got up there, did my performance for her. I was trying to do this regionals competition, and she was helping me out to kind of nail this thing down. And I got up there, did the song, and she sent me home. She's like, go home. You don't care. Go home. I'm like, what? I'm being fired. Like it was like she fired me. Right. And she's like, nope, I don't believe you. Go home. You don't care. Go home. You're done for the day. I'm like, no. Wait. What am I doing wrong? You know? And she's like, I don't believe you. You don't believe what you're talking about. I think it was R. Lee. It was just a song, a love song. And she's like, you're singing a love song to the love of your life. That's what this is about. I have to feel that. Like I have to, you have to convey that message in the song, which, you know, I took to heart. Like it hurt me. Like I was sent out. She literally sent me home.
Damn.
It was the best lesson ever.
Savage. And
I was still in junior high and she's like, get out. You don't care. I'm like, what? So I come back the next week. She's like, so what'd you learn? And I'm like, I nailed that thing, man. I believed it.
There you go.
Trust me, I believe. But here's the other thing is after singing a bunch of and leading worship in church that I knew I wasn't buying that. As I was coming out of my mouth, I started really starting to examine what I'm saying authentically. Like I had to stop leading worship at a certain point. And I'm like, I can't do this. It's not only disingenuous, it's damaging to my soul because I'm not being real about it. I'm lying to these people every single time I'm getting up there. Not that I'm lying to them, but I know there's more and nobody's getting it, right? And it's just inauthentic because we're doing the same stupid songs over and over again, and it's lost all its art. And if God wanted to be worshiped, it would have been through a creative form, not repeating, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance every morning.
Right.
You know, it has to be an authentic place, and you're not going to be connected to source unless it's at the very least authentic
I think that's why I've been seduced by the comedy temptress, because honestly I would have probably been that toxic positivity, you know, not actually facing the harsh truths of reality, instead avoiding those, which it's a balance, it's a dance, because you have to acknowledge the challenges, but it's also important to stay positive. But I think I would have been to the point of where I would have been basically repressing. And what do they call that? It's like, there's like a spiritual sort of spiritual bypassing or something like that.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think it's fitting. And everybody loves to laugh anyways. I mean, it's fun to laugh. It's just comedy is, it's not what I thought it would be, which is interesting. It's like anything. You try it out and you don't know if you're going to like it or not until you see. I thought I was going to love scuba diving, but I fucking hated that shit. I thought I was going to love working on a weed farm, but fuck that. You know, like I hated it. Just the worst. So
you don't know. But you had to find out, right?
Yeah, you got to find out. You got to test those.
So how long have you been doing comedy?
About 4.5 years now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Really seriously focusing on stand-up the past couple, because the pandemic kind of made it to where if you were doing improv or anything in a group, it was really difficult. And I did music for years and I loved doing music, but you know, somebody would get married or have a baby or leave town or whatever. And I always had to have a band, and I love working with people. I love having a band, but what's cool about comedy is if I'm free on Tuesday, and I usually am, I can just hit a mic, or, you know, somebody's like, hey,
no equipment set up. You don't have to bring in all your junk and yeah.
Yeah. And winds up being to produce the shows a lot more work, because there is some, if you really want the production to go off really well, then you're going to do lighting. You're going to make it nice. You're going to set the tables up properly and have people facing the stage instead of having their backs turned to it. Little things like that. But actually doing it, like I don't have to check with, you know, the drummer or the guitar player, make sure they're available and pack a bunch of shit in my car for the most part. But yeah, I kind of shifted over to it because I wanted to learn how to use it as an art form, and I'm still learning. you know, and I have no bones about that. I've had some bad sets and I've had some really good ones.
Those are the best, man. When I've gotten up and ruined a wedding because I forgot the words, dude, more than once. Those are good. It was terrible. It's still embarrassing. I see that. I talk to that person every once in a while, like every like 10 years or something, at high school reunions. I'm like, hey, man. I'm really sorry about your wedding. And they're like, dude, sorry. It was like 20 years ago. You're like, no.
Yeah, but I'm
still carrying this. I gotta let it go.
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's so funny. Like last month, the same mic that we did last night, the same venue and stuff. Man, I just really flopped. And it sucks to bomb your own mic because you got to stick around and watch everybody else crush.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're like, you did great.
It's like, ooh, you were bad, dude. It's like... I am not going on the billboard this time.
Right. Little name.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's
those are great experiences though, man. You don't know unless you have those.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Got to get out there.
You know,
nature, get your hands dirty.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that was one of the best things that my partner, where, when we were doing the rock band classes at this high school, one of our things were, we just want to get them on stage. Just learn the thing, do it. Don't talk about it. Don't practice. Feel perfect. You're never going to get it perfect. Get out on stage, fail, come back, figure out where you failed and go back out there and fail again until you, because it's not going to be that long. You might knock it out of the park the first time, but you'll definitely get better the next time, and you'll get really good the next time. You know, it's a failure if you went out and knocked it out of the park the first time, because you're never going to do it again. Because some people come back and they come back from that high and they're like, oh, it's going to be great. And then they fail and you're like, good, get back up. And they're like, no, I'm never doing that again. That, right. You know, it's like when you see that guy that has that killer set behind you, and you're like, that's it. I'm giving up my instrument. I am burning my guitars and my amps are gone. Cause that dude, I am never going to be right. As good as that dude.
We're not worthy.
Yeah.
We're not worthy.
Yeah. I get it. But you're going to be something different than that guy.
Exactly.
You're not, I have played with some fantastic musicians that I would have never compared myself to. And they're like, you know, and when we all see each other in that band and we're all kind of cooking, you know, when it's cooking, when you get in the pocket and there's the groove and everything's flow and you don't even have to think about it. It just comes out. It's like Charles Mingus always said that God is in the spaces between the notes. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have really, you ain't got music until you got the spaces, right? Because God's going to tell you what's happening when it's quiet. Mm. Right. So, I mean, it could be a whole bunch of notes, but it's not going to be music unless you get the rests. And he also said that when people asked him where this music came from, he's like, it comes from the ether. I don't know. Some up there. I'm just a vessel. It just flows through. And he's right, man. At a certain point, every, you know, musicians and authors, they don't know where it comes from. It just flows, because at a certain point we got out of our way. It became muscle memory, but you got out of your way for that second for it to become magic.
Yeah, there's two analogies I like here. The first thing that comes to mind is Norm MacDonald's famous question, where do you get your ideas from? Right. He would ask everybody that just to be kind of annoying, right?
Just to annoy people. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And then the other is Wayne Cohn of the Flaming Lips, who he talks about how, like, whenever you write something brilliant, it's like a cosmic accident. It's like this crazy miracle that happens between, you know, the universe and you as an individual. But he's like, but it doesn't go in there. It doesn't happen if you don't go in there and try for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You got to do that. You got to put yourself, if you just sit there and don't do anything, the miracle's not on the way. But if you go in there and you know, you kind of got to chase after it a bit, you know, try for it a little bit, but try easy. That's so good. Yeah. I love that. And especially in comedy, man, like for whatever reason, it's just very, it can be very tense and nerve wracking, you know. Music's that way too. I mean, stage fright is a real thing.
Real.
Jesus, yeah. Bro. I've never been more gripped than starting out and doing comedy having a little, because you go through stages, the learning curve is real. It's like you're talking about it. You do something, you do pretty good at it. Then you fail at it one time. You're like, I'm not fucking doing that again. Mm-hmm. But like, you just don't realize your perception's not there. It's like, to your point about the Mandela effect, your perception's not there. You think you did good. You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt good and it felt pretty good, but then you go again and your perspective widens and you start to understand how much more is involved and wrapped up in this process. And master makes it look easy. And yeah. So it's deceptive. And so anybody who's making something look easy, for sure, they've put a lot of time and work into it. So, you know, that whole like learning curve thing, like there's that part of the acquisition of the skill where it goes, I think it's the Johari window. It's like you're unconsciously incompetent first to start off, and then you become consciously incompetent, and then you become consciously incompetent, and then you become consciously competent.
Right. Like you learn all the rules and then you got to break them to make something else.
But you got to have
That's the coolest thing about Bella Fleck, the Flecktones. Like that is the weirdest band on paper you've ever heard of. It's a bluegrass banjo player, a funk bass player, a Jewish pianist harmonica player, and the bass player's brother plays drums on a weird ass drumatar machine thing.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
And he made it, you know? It sounds so bizarre on paper, but yeah. when you go to, if you've ever been to a Bella Fleck show, and please do it, it's great in recording, but it's nothing like being there. Like, go to jazz shows. Just experience it. But that group in particular has taken all these freaky genres that don't seem to mix on paper, but it mixes, it works beautifully because every single one of them are open. Howard Levy's harmonica skills are mind-blowing. I've never heard anything like that come from a human's mouth before. And I've never heard anything like Victor Wooten. Nobody plays like that dude. That's why everybody wants to imitate that dude.
Yeah, he is probably the best alive. But Les Claypool's maybe a close second, but my God. And he's a freak too, frankly. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know, but it's like you're saying, he's different, like, but he's different, you know, and Victor Wooten's different and Bootsy Collins is different, you know, and they, but they each have that mastery.
But they all had these rules. They come from whatever genre they were in and broke it and then reintegrated all these other things. You're talking about, Primus was punk. Like if you listen to the early Primus, it was punk. And then Les is playing like these funk things and Herb is playing these jazz fills, and they're taking all these genres and they're reintegrating all these, they're breaking it down to its components and then making something else out of it. And that's where innovation happens. When you learn all the rules, broke them, made something else. Do it to yourself. Learn all your rules, break it, start over, and find out what you are.
Yeah. Yep. I love it. Awesome. Awesome. Great place for us to, we could talk for, probably a very long time. And I'm excited at the prospect that we very likely soon will.
I think we will be.
Yeah. Continue.
No,
to.
We will be.
Yeah. We're going to be sharing some music too, because I, you know, that's something I'm very passionate about, music. And I love music.
What do you play? What's your instrument?
I'm a bass player. I started out playing guitar a little bit, but I switched over to the bass. My friend James was much better at guitar than I. And I did sing. I was also a singer as well.
So I played guitar, and then here's how Bela Fleck and Victor Wooten really influenced me is I wanted to sound like Bela Fleck on guitar, like his claw hammer thing. I'm like, that is the coolest thing. He's playing jazz on a banjo.
Yeah.
And it's the most amazing thing. It can sound absolutely beautiful or ugly and everything in between. It's just magic. But then I see Victor Wooten playing. I'm like, what? Like, it just completely blew my mind. I saw it in 1990, like their first tour, maybe 91. And it just broke me. I was like, this is a whole new world, right? So I get this, I'm trying to play guitar with like clawhammer picking, you know? And my wife gets me a 6-string bass. And because my buddy is like, maybe, you know, you should try that on bass and see what happens. So my wife gets me a 6-string and I retune and try it. And it comes up with this very different thing. Mm. Now, I am a one trick pony on that. It is my only trick on that 6-string bass. I would not call myself proficient, but it's a good trick. You know, like,
cool. That sounds like, cool. Yeah.
But
your bass, what?
Like, it's not. I don't know that it's even listenable to anybody else, but I think it's fun. You know,
it sounds fun. I would enjoy so, it.
But anyway, take all the things, break them, and you know, see what else you get.
I love it. Yeah, just keep on keeping on because it's never going to end anyway.
Experiment.
Chop exactly. Wood, carry water.
And right. Exactly. Yep.
And after.
Rinse and repeat.
Absolutely. 100%, man. Well, let us know where you're hanging out, where people can get at you.
I always plug the spiders. Well, Weaving Spiders, welcome. It's on Weaving Spiders Web's channel now.
I'll link it.
It's on Saturday nights. It's to be experienced. You have to be there or it's just a long 6-hour slog of listening to people talk over each other. But I love them very deeply.
Awesome. Is it still later at night on Saturdays?
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Usually 7 or 8 o'clock on Saturday nights Pacific. And then goes to whenever.
Oh, that's Pacific time.
Yeah.
So 7 or 8 would be, yeah, almost like midnight East Coast time.
Probably, yeah, it's late night for you guys.
Which is cool. I like late night stuff when I can do it, you know, and Saturday night's definitely one of those.
I do too. That's where weird conversations happen, you know?
It is.
Everybody starts getting a little loopy and a little comfortable and we're just relaxed, you know, and there's no rules, but, you know, you better be nice to each other and, you know, it's jazz conversation, you know. We play off each other's things and because of that, synchronicities happen. It's amazing every single time.
It is beautiful. I love the way it's woven together. Sorry for the pun, but
yeah, it's on purpose, man. That is on purpose for sure. Because it's
beautiful.
It is clearly like that. Most of my stuff's on Instagram, all my owl stuff. If you want to see tons of owl footage, and you should because it's awesome.
100.
I have a video on there. We just got another egg, so we're gonna have 3 babies this year. But there's a video on there of the parents celebrating the second egg. I caught it, and she's talking to the babies, like she's sitting. She comes in and she's just talk, pop, 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 pop. Like I'm like, they're human. They're so human. The more I spend time with them, the more I'm like, they're more human than we are. We have no idea what we're doing.
We're missing.
And some, yeah, you know, owls are. I could go on another 2 hours with owls, but anyway,
we should. Instagram. Well, this was, you know,
Gordy_2Shoes on Instagram.
You got it. I'll link that as well. And we'll this was long overdue, but it won't be long overdue the next time. We'll pick up and we can talk about owls. Actually, I would love to do that. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you too. I want to know your experience with them too.
Yeah, I just got to teach about them. And so I learned about them when I was an outdoor educator. And, you know, we would, of course, do the owl pellet dissection as well. But I learned just a lot of interesting facts about them and stuff. And it was fun. I loved that job. It was really cool to teach kids about nature. And it was a lot easier than traditional education because it's like, oh, if you're a little hyper, you can just run across the field and run back, you know, like go run, mm-hmm. go run. You know, we had to take them on hikes and stuff like that. So it was a little bit more engaging than sit in this desk and be quiet and take these pills.
And shut the fuck up. Shut up. And make sure you pass this one.
That's right. That's right. Well, man, thank you so much for taking the time. And like I said, it won't, we'll catch right back up and I'll see you all around. And everybody, be sure to follow Gordy, check out the owl stuff. And we'll see you guys all in the chats, in the telegrams, and in the dream space.
Until t.me/mysticstudies is the conspiratorium, my telegram group that I do Monday night chats at 8:30 Mountain. And we just have a live group, talk about whatever. I started it as a book club, but it's turned into whatever. Whatever happens that night, but we found, you know, I've connected well with Abby and a bunch of other people through that group. And you want to get to know some cool people, you know, hang out in the conspiratorium.
I will link that as well. Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Man. Thank you for doing this again. I appreciate this. God. And we'll do this a lot more.
Dude, no, thank you. I can't thank you enough. I've been looking forward to this, honestly, for a long time and certainly just didn't disappoint. So thank you. And yeah, man, we'll be in touch.
Thanks, man.
Bye, everybody.